If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And here to talk about the roster, the way it sits, at least on the 28th of August, 2024, from Press Box. Let's welcome back to the show, Bo Smolka. Bo, good morning. How are you feeling on this Woman Crush Wednesday?
Hi, good morning. I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Doing all right. Let's look at the 10 offensive linemen. And as you broke down your 53 on Press Box, how does that differ from what you may have imagined? And is this going to be etched in stone? Or are things going to change maybe dramatically in regard to numbers over the next 8 days there?
I mean, the bottom line is that the numbers will change. This happens every year. They set the 53, and then usually within 2 days it's different. I suspect by the time we get to Kansas City, there will be players on that roster that are not on the team now and vice versa. There may be a third quarterback added. We'll see about that. Whether there's moves all the time. As for the offensive linemen, they obviously made the choice to keep numbers there. John Harbaugh says they're set on what the starting offensive line will be. He wouldn't divulge it. I think we have a sense what it will be. I wasn't sure they would keep Saleh. I just don't know how he fits in right now, but they're using him at guard. They're using him at tackle. He's a guy that I guess they think they could put in there in a pinch. It seems they've already got other guys in the same boat there, such as Josh Jones. But they went ahead and kept all 10, and that was one modest surprise. Honestly, for the group that the 53 that they have there, I don't think there were many surprises. Some years they'll make a trade, like when they traded Sean Wade away. Some years they'll add a player. A couple of years back, or a few years now, you may remember they traded for Luke Bowanko and Tony Bergstrom, who guys we'd never heard of, and suddenly they're on the 53-man roster, and they had to set foot in the building. None of that happened. I think maybe one modest surprise people were taken by was Pepe Williams getting cut. But that was just a situation where that secondary was just their deepest area, and he just was outperformed by others.
Well, I think the thing there was, I mean, they kept six safeties. And Pepe, you know, at University of Houston, he was mostly a safety. And he missed a lot of tackles in the preseason. I think Bo Braid outplayed him in the preseason, and maybe that's why they kept six safeties. And Bo, maybe they're saying, is better on special teams, you know, than Pepe was. So good for Bo. I think he had a hell of a camp. Hell of a camp. He showed up a lot in those games.
I totally agree with you. I thought he earned his spot completely. And again, remember, they only kept five, quote, cornerbacks. But remember, Kyle Hamilton's going to be playing a lot in the slot, and Ardarius Washington will sometimes play in the slot. So they're kind of hybrid cornerback safety type. So that also changes the numbers game in terms of how they use their defensive backs. Because a lot of years they'll keep six cornerbacks. And you're right. I mean, I think the implication has to be that Bo Braid is a better special teams player, because when you get to those last defensive backs, or those last 51, 52, 53 on the roster, it comes down to whether you can play special teams. And Braid was consistent all camp. And I agree. I totally thought he earned his spot. And if you asked me 3 days ago what undrafted rookie I thought might make the team, it would have been him.
Yeah, the thing too, Bo, is they only kept basically one backup inside linebacker, because Malik Harrison kind of plays everything. And I think that would be just because, like you were talking about with Hamilton, he plays everywhere. Ardarius plays everywhere. Kind of tells me they're going to be a lot of nickel and dime defense throughout the year a lot.
Yeah, they could do that. They definitely could. Hamilton will float around and play in there too in a dime. They'll show a lot of different looks that way. And I still think they're going to go out and look around and see what inside linebackers are out there on the street. They've done it before. They do it a lot. They brought Josh Bynes in one time. They've brought inside linebacker help a lot. As you mentioned, Malik Harrison's basically an outside linebacker in their base defense. And other than Malik Harrison, you've got Chris Board as a backup to Roquan Smith and Simpson, and that's it. Josh Ross was cut, and he was a borderline guy who's been in the concussion protocol. Maybe he comes back to the practice squad and works his way back. Inside linebacker strikes me a position where There usually is a veteran player out there they can bring in and plug in for a few weeks here or there. I think that's a spot they'll fortify at some point. But I think both outside linebacker and inside linebacker are questionable in terms of depth because, again, we don't know when Adisa Isaac is going to contribute because he's hurt again. So you're really down to four guys there, and Harrison becomes a fifth. But I think it's a little thin at linebacker, but they know that, and I think they'll continue to look at who's out there.
Well, when you get to the game day roster, I mean, Isaac won't be ready anyhow. Now, one of the things I think, Bo, let me hear your opinion. I think they could add a running back that's better than Ali, just because Ali does, you know, what Harbs hates, and that's the fumbling part. And I wish they would add a blocking tight end also.
Yeah, that's interesting. They're really waiting for Charlie Kolar to emerge as a blocking tight end, and he has a ways to go there.
Yes, he does.
You know, they're trying. They're giving him every shot to do it. And so we'll see there. You know, they weren't going to go. They weren't going to keep four tight ends plus Ricard. And so, you know, if Kolar can't be a blocking tight end, he's going to be exposed quickly. And we'll see if that happens. As for the running back, yeah, Ali. Because I don't think Ali's going to be ready to play in week one. John Harbaugh already said he's iffy for that game, which tells you probably not. And he hasn't practiced in probably 3 weeks, and they play in 8 days. So I don't see him being in uniform for that day. So then the question is, do they, for example, bring back Collier to the practice squad and bring him up as a game day elevation for that day? And maybe he's the second kick returner back there with Hardy. We saw him back there a little bit in that role. Do they go out and get another running back? There's plenty of running backs that will be out there if they want to go that route. Again, when you have Derrick Henry and Justice Hill, this third running back is going to primarily be a special teams guy. I think Owen Wright was in spot, showed well on the kick returns, and it was a real tough break that he got hurt because I think he might have beat out Ali. I know the team is loyal to draft picks, so we'll never know if Wright would have won out over Ali. Wright, no question, outperformed Ali in training camp. But I do think there's a chance that Collier comes back to the practice squad and is a game day elevation. I think there's a chance they bring up another running back. The guys, I think when they go to Kansas City, they will have three running backs in uniform, and I don't think Ali will be one of them.
Bo Smolka, Press Box, talking Ravens with him. Bo, real quick, what's happening in Press Box 8 days away from kickoff?
Well, we'll be looking at what the practice squad looks like today. We'll be looking today to see if any of their players get claimed on waivers. That is due at noon, and then the practice squad can begin to be built. In the in Press Box itself, in the print issue, I have a cover story on Kyle Hamilton, kind of where he came from growing up in Atlanta to how he got to where he is today. Talked to his high school coach and to his dad, and it was really interesting to see his evolution over time. So that's in the print issue, and it's online, and then we'll be tracking that practice squad and waiver wire today.
Bo Smolka, always appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your Woman Crush Wednesday.
All right, Bob and Vinny, thank you. Take care.
Yep. Bo Smolka, everybody. We'll come back, whip around what happened in the world of sports last night, what happened historically with the Orioles on August 28th. Good stuff. I mean, we're not going to tell you games they lost. Duh. And then coming up at 11:30, we're going to tackle the AFC North, break out the pads and the spit guard. What did Ray Lewis say? Get your chin scraps ready because we're coming AFC North style.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The 30.
Vinny and Hades with
brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes, the best crab cakes in Harford County.
1057 The Fan.
Vinny and Hades, 1057 The Fan, here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. We're going to tackle the AFC North bottom of the hour. Stay tuned for that. But speaking of the National Football League, and look, we have news from the next top of the hour. Got NFL lunch at 1 o'clock. Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com, 115. Plenty to go in regards to the NFL gridiron. But a former Ravens receiver, a year ago at this time, a lot of hubbub about this guy. he was one of the more popular players at Owings Mills, if not the most popular player.
Yeah.
Then he left via free agency. If you're wondering who we're talking about, remember this guy?
Pressure from the backside. Lofts one, and Beckham's loose! Underthrown, he's got it! And a Ravens touchdown!
That's Odell Beckham Jr. against the Rams. And arguably the best game of the Ravens, the most exciting game of the season, is Tylan Wallace walk-off punt return there. Fox on the call. But Odell Beckham Jr., at one time one of the best receivers in the National Football League. Unfortunately, injuries to the knee have taken its toll. Leaves via free agency. It didn't appear as though, Vinny, the Ravens were making a big effort to keep him around, if you know what I'm saying.
I think they were one and done. And I think he did what he was brought in to do. I mean, they paid him a ton, and supposedly it was help get Lamar signed, and I think that did. And he brought a lot of hub-hub, and I think what he brought was, like, it's okay for receivers to come to Baltimore.
Sure.
And he made some plays for him, and Bob, let me just say this, like, he didn't practice OTAs or minicamp, but when he was in training camp, he was first one out there working, and he was good with all the other guys, with all his teammates. I think for what he did for the Ravens, I think he was good for the Ravens.
Well, he left as a free agent, went to the Dolphins, and yesterday it was announced he'll spend at least the first four games in Miami on the pup. And, I mean, his appearances during training camp were pretty much limited.
I'm trying to figure out, Bob, if he's had a practice with the Dolphins yet. OTAs, minicamp, training camp.
Browns are going to keep four quarterbacks, at least for now. That's not
going to be
real.
Probably till today, tomorrow. Because, I mean, they put out there they want to. And Bob, look at when people put out there that they're trying to trade the guy. That, okay. And somebody says, why should I trade from him? Because you know what? You're going to cut him anyhow. And that's what everybody's saying about these quarterbacks is you're not going to keep all four. I can just get him. I can get him tomorrow, and I don't have to give you a draft pick.
But it seems as though Dorian Thompson-Robinson is going to be the backup to Watson, where Jameis Winston and Tyler Huntley are the two that are going to be available.
No doubt. And they've said that, and that's interesting because Dorian Thompson-Robinson was awful against the Ravens last year.
Yeah, first game there against them in Cleveland. It's the Whip Around, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. College football has already started. Florida State already had upset. Florida State lost to Georgia Tech. But Maryland opens 20.5-point favorites against UConn on Saturday at CQ Field. And we'll talk about it tomorrow and on Friday. But you got North Carolina, Minnesota.
That'll be an interesting game.
Fox National TV.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one, Bob, because, you know, Drake May's gone from Carolina. Carolina's got an outstanding running back. And P.J. Fleck, you know, is the boat not rowing anymore?
I mean, they're kind of, 7-8 win. They're like Maryland.
Yeah,
kind of, sort of.
No doubt.
A little bit. But is that what Minnesota was hoping for when they got P.J. Fleck?
Well, I think they've had one or two good years. But he seems like, Bob, the type of guy that may wear you out.
With all the cliches and such, rowing boats.
Yeah, yeah. Because remember, we had him on, and he was
kind of a douche. Second time talking about Falele, he was more engaged and, you know, doing. Sometimes you just have a bad day.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Maybe we caught him the first time on a bad day. College basketball. Joe Lunardi, his latest bracketology. He's got Maryland getting in as a number 11 seed, basically on the bubble.
Oof.
And they would play in the first four against Oregon. You know, this is all way to be determined. I mean, we're not even, you know, it's not even September yet. But, you know, the passage of time, Nolan, creeps up very rapidly. And we've already got basketball on our minds for sure. It's the Whip Around, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, Orioles history. It's August the 28th, 1983, Memorial Stadium. Memorial Stadium, 33rd Street. John Lowenstein went deep. Disco Dan Ford, Eddie Murray at 3 ribbies each. Cal Ripken at 2. Mike Flanagan got the win, 11-4. Orioles eventual world champs over the Twins, 2012. Oriole Park, Camden Yards. Lou Ford and Adam Jones hit homers. Remember Lou Ford?
I remember him.
You do?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember the name. Yep.
Okay. Nick Markakis had 3 ribbies. Chris Tillman went 7 one-hit shutout innings to get the win, 6-0 Orioles over the White Sox. 2014, 10 years ago, Oriole Park, Camden Yards. Steve Pierce went deep. Andrew Miller got the win. Zach Britton is 29th save, 5-4. Orioles edge the Rays. 2016 in the Bronx, Steve Pierce and Trumbaum go deep. How about Kevin Gausman going 7 shutout innings as the Orioles beat the Yankees 5-0? And then a year ago today, Oriole Park, Camden Yards, Tony Tater's 3-run shot, Ryan O'Hearn and Ryan McKenna, now in Philly's organization, had 2 ribbies each. Grayson Rodriguez, 6 shutout innings. Orioles blank the White Sox, 9-0. Current day Orioles in L.A., taking on the Dodgers. We'll talk about that. Jim Hunter, Orioles win last night, 3-2, behind 2 homers and an outstanding bullpen performance. Hey, Cole Irvin got him in 2, the 5th inning. But when we come back, we're going to tackle the AFC North. It's the AFC North report. Break out the knee pads, get the shoulder pads, get your chin strap ready to rock and roll. We got AFC North, arguably the best division of football. We're talking about Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Cincinnati next. And let's go around and find out what's happening elsewhere in the North, and we'll start with the Ravens' biggest rival, I would say, in the AFC North, if not all of the National Football League, from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Let's welcome back to talk about the Steelers, Brian Batko. Brian, good morning. How are you? Welcome to the Fan again.
Good morning, guys. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
All right. The Steelers training camp, the quarterback tussle between Russell Wilson, Justin Fields. I know Mike Tomlin has been pretty mum in regards to actually naming a starter ahead of the Falcons game, September the 8th. What sort of intel do you have? Who will be the starting quarterback at 1 o'clock that afternoon on the road?
Well, guys, it would not surprise me if he announces today that it's Russell Wilson. It would surprise me if Justin Fields is under center for that first snap in Atlanta. Tussle might be a good word because the tussle's kind of a light fight, right? There's not really much to it. It's probably like the older brother shrugs off the little brother quickly and everybody moves on. I think that's basically what this was. I think Justin Fields, you know, had a little bit of daylight with the calf injury for Russ starting camp, but all Wilson really had to do was show that he had something left in the tank in the third preseason game, made a good throw or two, and that should send him on down the road to the Falcons game.
Are they happy with Patrick Queen?
Yes, I think everybody's very happy with Patrick Queen. He's been a stabilizing presence for this defense, and they've got some question marks up front. They've got some question marks in the secondary. I think it could be the strongest unit on their team, inside linebacker, and with Queen being a big reason for that.
Now, they seem to have issues in the offensive line, just like the Ravens.
Yes, they do. All their best laid plans for running out 2 first-round picks and back-to-back drafts at the tackle spots were derailed a bit by this year's first-rounder, 20th overall, Troy Fautanu, banging up his knee in the first preseason game. He wasn't even playing well after switching from college left tackle to NFL right tackle in that game. So I think it's not going to be a case where he's starting week 1. They're going to need Broderick Jones to continue holding down the fort at right tackle, and they hope old reliable Dan Moore can get the job done for a 4th straight season, at least at the start on the left side.
Now, how is the depth at the wide receiver spot?
Well, the fans hate it, I can tell you that much. They think the Steelers need to trade for Brandon Ayuk,
right,
or go sign somebody off the scrap heap. But I don't know, guys. I mean, it's not great. You look at the receiving core on paper, and it's pretty thin. When you start talking about someone like Van Jefferson, who's, I'd say, at journeyman status in his NFL career as your number 2, that's a bit worrisome on its face. But I think in an Arthur Smith offense, they're going to be leaning heavily on the run anyway, and when they do throw it, first read George Pickens, second read Pat Freiermuth. After that, maybe a by committee approach for who's going to be the complimentary wideout. So I don't know that it's as big of a deal as it would be for a team that's going to be in 11 personnel and trying to throw the ball all around.
We're tackling the AFC North. We're talking Steelers with Brian Bacco from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Vinny at Haiti 105.7 The Fan. Brian, last thing for you. Mike Tomlin took a lot of heat. You mentioned the fans from them and I guess a lot of media, local and national as well. Are we talking about Mike Tomlin being on the hot seat this year for the first time maybe ever?
No, I don't think so, guys. I mean, he's getting some runway here in the post-Ben Roethlisberger era to try to get things back to the Steelers being a dominant franchise and winning some playoff games and contending for the Super Bowl year in and year out. It hasn't gone well so far, I'd say, much like a lot of head coaches and GMs can say around the league. Biggest reason for that would be the quarterback position not being what they thought it was when they signed and drafted some of these guys. But no, I wouldn't say that. He signed another extension this offseason. I think he's got a lot more confidence from the people who signed the checks and those who matter most than he does the natives who are getting restless here in Western PA.
Brian Bacco, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Brian, appreciate your time as always. Enjoy the rest of your woman crush Wednesday.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks. I appreciate it, guys.
There's Brian Bacco talking about the Steelers. Let's move it now to Cleveland. And from brownzone.com, let's welcome back to the show Scott Petrak. Scott, good morning. How are you feeling on this woman crush Wednesday?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing all right. Cleveland, four quarterbacks. Explain that philosophy, at least as we sit here on August the 28th.
I don't think they keep four for much longer. I think it's a matter of general manager Andrew Berry thinking he can trade one for an asset, so he's okay kind of fiddling with the roster at cut down day and maybe sacrificing the 53rd guy so he can hopefully get, whether it's a fifth-round pick, a sixth-round pick, something back for, and I assume it'll be Tyler Huntley, but one of those four guys.
Now, what about the defense? Have they figured out how to play defense on the road yet?
Well, I'll tell you what, they've talked about it an awful lot since last season. It seems to come up just about every day out here. I think they are going to be just as good on defense this year. I know they play tougher quarterbacks, so the stats might not show it. But in year two under coordinator Jim Schwartz, I think his playbook will be bigger. I think the comfort level will be higher. Yeah, they've kept all their biggest guys. They've added some guys. I think this defense is going to be really good. But your point is correct. They need to play better on the road. And I think they spent a lot of time trying to figure out why they weren't good on the road last year.
Now, what about the loss of Billy Callahan? How's that going to affect the offense?
It's so interesting. You know, it's an offensive line coach, and normally that guy, people don't even know who it is. But it's Bill Callahan, and the Browns spent 4 years saying that he's the best offensive line coach in the league. He had his hands all over the protection schemes. He had his hands all over the run scheme. When they lost their top, four out of five tackles last year to injury, and he was able to figure out a way to get them, to help get them to the playoffs with backups there. So I don't think it's the end of the world that they lose Bill Callahan, and they brought in Andy Dickerson, who used to coach with Callahan. So the transition should be pretty smooth. But I don't want to say it's going to be no factor, because he was a big part of this coaching staff.
Now, what have you seen from Deshaun Watson?
Inconsistency. You know, he's coming off the shoulder surgery in November. The last time he played was that comeback win in Baltimore. And I think physically he's okay. I saw him make throws where you say the arm looks fine. He's able to throw it downfield. He's able to throw it with velocity. There's a throw he made right at the end of minicamp where he's moving left, feet weren't set, and he threw it on the money about 45 yards downfield. And I said, okay, he's fine. But there's throws in training camp that floated. There's slow decisions. So it's good days and bad days. It's good throws and bad throws, which is kind of how he's been since he's been in Cleveland for 2 years. So I think you're just going to see more of that, especially early in the year, because he didn't play in the preseason, hasn't gotten a ton of reps with the whole receiving corps. Jerry Jeudy missed time, Amari Cooper missed time, David Njoku missed time. So it feels like the offense and Watson in particular are still a work in progress.
Scott Petrak, brownzone.com. We're tackling the AFC North here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. Scott, last thing for you. Dallas coming up, season opener at home. Biggest question relating to the Browns is what going into that game?
I would say left tackle. Jedrick Wills Jr. has not practiced yet. He passed his physical this weekend or Monday and was activated but still hasn't practiced. Jack Conklin seems like he might be the guy week one, even though he spent his career his NFL career at right tackle, and he's coming off a serious knee injury and just started practicing Tuesday. So against that pass rush, against Micah Parsons, left tackle is a big question.
Scott Patrack, BrownZone.com. Scott, always appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll catch up eventually, obviously.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott Patrack, everybody. And finally, let's go to Cincinnati as the Bengals coming off a season in which they won more than they lost but did not reach the heights they had hoped because of injuries to their quarterback and others. And here he is from the Cincinnati Inquirer. Let's welcome back Charlie Goldsmith. Charlie, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Of course, Ja'Marr Chase's status for New England September 8th will be what?
Zach expects he's going to play, and it seems like this is where this has been trending all summer. There was never a moment like Jerry Jones saying he didn't have urgency to sign CeeDee Lamb. Chase was engaged. He was involved. He was on the sideline coaching up teammates. It never felt like there was much animosity on either side, and Zach Taylor confirmed it yesterday. He expects Chase to play.
Now, Charlie, this is the first time Joe Burrow as a Bengal has made it through training camp healthy. How good does he look now, and how much does he feel so much better now that he got to practice in training camp?
Yeah, I agree with what I'm about to say, but I think Zach Taylor kind of worded it best. He phrased it very well when he said some practices that Burrow had, especially the joint practice against the Colts to wrap up the summer, was reminiscent of the best games Burrow played last year. And kind of what flew under the radar with how rocky and turbulent the season was when Burrow was fully healthy, the Bengals beat the Seahawks. They smoked the Niners. They crushed the Bills. They were a drop touchdown away from beating the Texans in a game where they scored 31 points. And they were up on the Ravens. Burrow was playing as well as I'd ever seen him before he got hurt. And then I really would back up what Zach said in terms of the throws, the anticipation, the clean reading the field, the arm strength, 60-yard throws on the run. Burrow checked every box I wanted to see this summer.
How has T. Higgins looked?
Higgins had his best camp as a Bengal, too. He's a guy who his season also never really got off the ground last year. Dealt with a cracked rib early in the season. A hamstring injury kept him out of the middle of the year. He came back. The hamstring injury caught up to him again. With Higgins, it was funny. Like in camp, Burrow could complete a pass to Higgins whenever he wanted, so much so that you could very much feel Burrow not forcing, but forcing himself to not throw to Higgins and get the entire offense involved. And obviously that'll change when Ja'Marr's there. But Higgins, from an athleticism standpoint, from a contested catch, I think his hands are stronger and he's better kind of separating at the top of the route. Very impressive camp from T. Higgins. This will be a top 10, top 5 passing offense just like it's always been.
Now, Charlie, how's the secondary?
Secondary, what they'll tell you is communication just gives them a lot more peace of mind. Last year, there were a bunch of plays where the Bengals had guys running the wrong way. The communication wasn't there. They allowed more explosive plays than anyone in the league. So what they do, they brought in Geno Stone. You guys know what he brings to the table. And they brought back Von Bell, who was the captain and was the kind of the heartbeat of the Bengals defense in the first place. With those guys back, that frees Lou Anarumo up to do like some of the very specific game plans that he's known for, which kind of had to get away from last year because they weren't executing them. And that kind of gives the defense a B level, a solid level. And then it's their young corners, Dax Hill and Cam Taylor-Britt. They've got talent. This could be especially Cam could be a great corner, and Dak certainly has the pedigree to do it. But, of course, they're young players. You haven't seen it from them. How good this secondary will be if it can reach the A-minus A territory is whether or not those guys are ready to take a leap.
Charlie Goldsmith, Cincinnati Inquirer, tackling the AFC North. Biddy at Haiti 105.7, the Fan, talking Bengals. Last thing for you, Charlie. The leading rusher for the Cincinnati Bengals in 2024 will be who?
I think Chase Brown, or I know, Chase Brown and Zach Moss will split snaps. It'll probably be an even 50-50 split from a snap standpoint. But Chase Brown is going to do more with those snaps. A big talking point is the Bengals going more under center. I'd say the biggest reason to go under center, even more than the play-action passing game, is what that can do for Chase Brown as an under center rusher. Because I think he's going to break off 20-yard runs more often than Joe Mixon ever did, I think he'll just rack up more overall yards, and that'll lead to him being the overall leader from a statistical standpoint.
Charlie Goldsmith, always appreciate your time. Cincinnati Inquirer, enjoy the rest of your Woman Crush Wednesday, and we'll be talking to you multiple times over the next few months, obviously.
Thank you.
There's Charlie Goldsmith, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back, reset the program for you. News for the Nest, top of the hour. Talk Ravens, 53-man is set, at least for August the 28th. Buy or sell, where's the midweek money? Hopefully counting that at 12:15. And then Jim Hunter, our colleague, Baltimore Baseball Tonight, brought to you by Salvo Auto Parts. Longtime voice of the Orioles. Orioles in L.A., taking on the Dodgers game two. Corbin Burns trying to get it back together. And the Orioles surprise L.A. as underdogs out there in Chavez Ravine, trying to win the series tonight. In late August, let's bring Nolan in. I know we don't have time for a fun house. We'll do that next hour. But Nolan, you got to stay up late, or you had to watch the replay like we did as old geezers in the morning as they got through six. But still, even at 5:30 this morning, watching Sir Anthony Dominguez had me running hot, even though I already knew the outcome of the game.
Well, you gave him the sir back. I just noticed whether it was intentional or not.
He did well against Houston over the weekend.
All right, so that's two in a row.
I have dubbed the Sir Anthony.
All right, he's been knighted.
Yes. That's reunited. Can you do that?
I actually made it through the entire game, although my eyes were certainly flickering there in the ninth. And then, of course, after you get the final out, you're so amped up and energized, and now I can't fall asleep because the Orioles just won a close game. But I'll take it. As good as the win was, you mentioned some of the struggles still existing, hits with runners in scoring position. There was a moment in the third inning which I thought could have flipped the entire game. Top half of the inning, the Orioles looked like they were going to stage kind of a two-out rally there. Couser got on, Adley got on, Gunner comes to the plate and pops out. Mm-hmm. All right, kind of kills the rally there, but it's still tied 1-1. Bottom half of the inning, Cole Irvin cruises to his first two outs. Otani starts the rally, gets a single. All right, that's what Otani does. Probably going to win the MVP again. You tip your cap, but then you let them start to creep back into it. They made it interesting there in the inning. They end up scoring. I thought that that was a perfect case in point. Two contenders, obviously, two playoff teams, but what separates an elite contender from just a team that's going to make the playoffs and the Orioles, the elite team finds a way to score with two outs. The Orioles did not. Obviously, it didn't matter in the grand scheme of things, but those are the little things that start to add up over the span of 162.
How about I flip the opposite? Yeah. The Orioles didn't implode. And they had that two-run rally going that you talked about, Teoscar Hernandez driving in the run, all-star, by the way, that could have pear-shaped big time, where it becomes 2-1, becomes 5-1 all of a sudden, which you've seen. So they stemmed the tide. And then Bowman came in and really did a hell of a job. Cionel Perez, again, we talk about Dominguez. But how about Ramon Urias? Again, we go back to something we talked about earlier in the show. I figured he might be a guy that's not long for Baltimore this season. Yeah. I mean, he rode the bench for long periods of time, but injuries have opened up opportunities for him, and there's a guy. And Hyde said before the game, we need to start picking up our injured dudes. There's a guy that's picking up for injured players, Ramon Urias. Good job.
Certainly Keep doing his rolling, part.
No
yeah,
doubt.
And you remember when Kobe Mayo was here for a little stint, got his first hit, gets sent right back down, and people were complaining, this guy finally gets a hit and you demote him. But when they made that move, Ramon Urias was the guy in mind. When you make that sort of move and they bring up, what was it, Levon Soto was the replacement for Mayo on the roster at the time.
Yeah, he's back now for Mountie.
Well, he'll be gone by tomorrow, I'm guessing. I mean, that's just been the Soto story. But they leaned heavily, that was the vote of confidence on Urias at the time, and he's made the most of it.
Yeah, and look, Mayo defensively is equal to Kerstad defensively. We love these bats, and you hope that they can transition. We were talking about it on BBT Friday with Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick. Mayo's a big target. Maybe first base will be the end result for him as a defensive player, but he can hit. Unfortunately for Kerstad, the concussion protocol, after he got brained by the Yankees a month ago, it seems. That's still an issue there, but the Orioles win the opener, and that's all that matters going for the series win. Corbin Burns, you're an ace. You've won a Cy Young. You want to maybe win another one? Let's pick up the pace here in late August into September. We'll come back, talk about the Ravens a little bit more. 53-man roster. We'll break it down by position with Vinny. Where's the strengths? Where's the weaknesses? And who could be a breakout player in 24?
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.